Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive?
Definitely.
Awesome. Today we're tackling a case that shaped education as we know it. It's Pierce v. Society of Sisters.
A case that goes way beyond education too when you think about
it. Look, absolutely, we're talking individual liberty, state power, even corporate rights, all wrapped up in one.
We've got some fascinating sources for this one. Excerpts from pasted text, a Supreme Court brief, and even a Perplexity analysis to dig into. Should be interesting to see what those algorithms make of this whole thing.
And it all started with a law that basically outlawed private schools. Can you imagine?
Yeah, 1922, Oregon passes this compulsory education act. Every single kid, 8 to 16, public school, no exceptions.
Wow. So what was the thinking behind that? Like, what was going on back then?
Well, you got to remember the historical context. Big wave of anti-Catholic sentiment, anti-immigrant feeling as well. Groups like the KKK pushing this idea of public schools as the great Americanizer.
So it wasn't just about education then. It was about shaping society, making everyone conform.
Exactly. Social engineering, some might call it. And naturally, not everyone was thrilled with this idea.
I can imagine. So who stepped up to challenge this law?
Two groups, actually. You had the Society of Sisters, Catholic organization, running schools, orphanages, the whole works.
Okay, makes sense. They'd be directly affected.
Right. But then on the other side, Hill Military Academy, private, non-sectarian, but still, they saw this law as a major threat.
A military academy and a Catholic group teaming up. That's an interesting alliance.
Really shows you how far-reaching this law was, right? Everyone felt targeted.
Yeah, like the state was trying to monopolize education, cut out any alternatives.
Exactly. They argued this was a massive overreach of government power. And it all boiled down to two big constitutional questions. First, does forcing kids into public school violate the 14th Amendment rights of parents?
Interesting. So parental rights are front and center.
And the second question, does this law illegally deprive private schools of their property without due process?
So you've got individual liberty and corporate rights all tangled up in this one case. No wonder it's such a landmark decision.
It's a fascinating mix, legally speaking. And get this, the Supreme Court, they struck down the Oregon law unanimously.
Wow, unanimous. They must have seen some serious problems with this law. What was their reasoning?
Justice McReynolds, he wrote the opinion, and he had this line that's become super famous. The child is not the mere creature of the state.
Whoa. Powerful stuff. Really makes you think about who has the authority over a child's upbringing.
Right. And the court went on to establish three key principles that have shaped the whole debate about educational freedom ever since.
Okay, lay those principles on me. What was the first one?
First, they affirmed the existence of parental rights. Parents have a fundamental right to direct their children's upbringing, and that includes their education.
So the state can't just dictate everything. Parents have a say.
Exactly. Now, this doesn't mean states have zero role in education.
Right. They can't just let schools run wild.
Of course not. But they can't create a public school monopoly either. Parents need options.
Makes sense. Okay, what was the second principle?
This one gets into the corporate side of things. The court said, look, corporations, they might not have the same personal liberties as individuals, but they do have property rights.
So even though a school isn't a person, shutting it down without a good reason violates those rights.
Precisely. It's like seizing someone's business for no reason. The court saw that Oregon law as a direct attack on private schools, potentially wiping them out without due process.
Wow, that's heavy. Okay, what about the third principle?
This is where it gets really interesting, the reasonableness test. The court basically said this Oregon law, it wasn't reasonably connected to a legitimate state goal.
So wanting to standardize education wasn't enough to just trample on everyone's rights.
Nope. You need a better reason than that. And that's what makes Pierce so important. It's about finding that balance, state power versus individual rights.
It's amazing how a case from 1925 is still so relevant today. This whole debate about school choice, parental rights, the role of the state, it's all still playing out.
Absolutely. In fact, the impact of Pierce went way beyond just education.
It really did go beyond education, didn't it? How so? Like, what other areas were impacted?
Well, for one, it played a big role in shaping what we call substantive due process. Sounds kind of technical, but basically,
I'm all ears. Legal jargon is my jam.
Basically, it's the idea that there are certain rights so fundamental, so essential, they're protected even if they're not explicitly spelled out in the Constitution.
Okay, I get it. Like, some rights are so basic they go without saying.
Right. And Pierce helped solidify that concept. They recognized a fundamental right of parents to direct their kids' upbringing, even though it's not mentioned specifically in the Constitution. And you know what? This same idea of substantive due process
popped up again later, didn't it?
Big time. Think Roe v. Wade. Recognizing a woman's right to choose, even though it's not explicitly listed in the Constitution.
Wow, so a case about private schools ends up influencing abortion rights decades later. That's wild.
Yeah, it shows you how legal precedent works. One case can set the stage for a whole chain reaction.
Makes you think about the ripple effect of these decisions.
Absolutely. And Pierce didn't just influence Roe. There's connections to Brown v. Board of Education, too.
Brown v. Board, 1954. Right. The case that desegregated public schools. But how does a private school case tie into that?
It's subtle, but important. Brown focused on equality, making sure all kids have access to the same opportunities, regardless of race.
Right, leveling the playing field.
Exactly. While Pierce, it emphasizes liberty, the freedom to choose the kind of education you want for your kids.
Two different angles, but both essential for a fair system, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's worth pointing out, even though Pierce focused on choice, it didn't completely shut down state regulation of education.
So it's not a free-for-all.
Right. The court recognized states have an interest in setting some standards.
They can't just let schools operate however we want. There needs to be some oversight.
Exactly. Remember that reasonableness standard. Well, it suggests the state can regulate, but those regulations, they have to be reasonable, connected to a legitimate purpose.
Always coming back to that balance, huh? Individual freedom versus the need for some rules and oversight.
That's the heart of it. And finding that balance can be really tricky. Judges have to weigh competing interests, make tough calls. And that's why Pierce is still debated today, reinterpreted as new challenges pop up.
Speaking of reasonableness,
yeah,
isn't that kind of subjective? Like, how do you even define what's reasonable in a given situation? Seems open to a lot of interpretation.
You hit the nail on the head. Reasonableness can be super slippery, and it means the judges got to use their judgment, look at the facts of each case. That's why legal precedent is so important.
Like a guidepost, but not a hard and fast rule, right?
Perfect analogy. And that's what makes Pierce so enduring. It makes us grapple with these huge questions about individual freedom versus government power, especially when it comes to our kids' education.
So we've got Roe, we've got Brown. Any other big cases that connect to Pierce?
Oh, yeah. One you might not immediately think of. Wisconsin v. Yoder.
Yoder, remind me about that one.
This one involved the Amish community challenging Wisconsin's compulsory education law. They said forcing their kids to go to high school violated their religious beliefs.
So back to education, but with a religious freedom twist.
Right. And the court, they straight up referenced Pierce as precedent. They said Pierce already established this fundamental right of parents to choose their kids' education, even if it goes against the mainstream.
So even though Yoder was about religion, it leaned heavily on those parental rights from Pierce.
Exactly. It shows how legal principles can jump from one case to the next, becoming these cornerstones of our understanding of rights.
It's like this whole network of interconnected cases shaping the legal landscape. Amazing to see how it all fits together.
Totally. And that's what makes constitutional law so fascinating. It's not just about individual cases. It's about seeing the big picture, how those cases build upon each other.
So after this deep dive into the legal nitty-gritty, I think I finally get how Pierce v. Society of Sisters fits into everything. It's not just about private schools, it's about liberty, parental rights, and drawing those lines between individual freedom and government power.
Exactly. And those lines are constantly being debated, which is why Pierce is still relevant today. It's not just a historical artifact, it's a living, breathing legal principle that continues to shape these really important conversations.
And you know what really drives that home for me? That quote we talked about earlier.
You mean Justice McReynolds' line?
Yeah. The fundamental theory of liberty excludes any general power to standardize children. It's powerful stuff.
Powerful and super relevant. It reminds us that while the state has a role, ultimately parents are the ones responsible for guiding their kids' education.
So we've gone through history, legal precedent, and the impact of Pierce. But I'm curious to see how these principles play out in the real world today, you know?
That's a great point. We've laid the groundwork, but now it's time to see how Pierce is being used in those legal battles happening right now. And trust me, things can get pretty heated.
And we're back. Wrapping up our deep dive into Pierce v. Society of Sisters. We've talked history, we've talked legal precedent, how this case ties into everything from Roe v. Wade to Brown v. Board. But now, let's fast forward. bring things into the 21st century.
And you know what's interesting? Pierce v. Society of Sisters, it's become this go-to argument for both sides of the education debate today.
So kind of double-edged sword. Used to support totally opposite viewpoints.
Yeah, exactly. Take school choice, for example. Big push for charter schools, voucher programs, all that. Well, proponents of that stuff, they often point right back to Pierce.
Say it backs up their whole argument.
Yep. They say, look, Pierce affirms this right of parents to choose the best educational setting for their child, whether it's public, charter, private, whatever.
So limiting parents to just their assigned public school kind of goes against that whole idea of parental freedom that Pierce was all about.
That's the argument. They say Pierce supports a more market-driven approach, you know, parents voting with their feet, picking schools that match their values, their kids' needs.
But I'm guessing not everyone's on board with that.
Oh, definitely not. Critics of school choice say, hold on, this could actually make things worse. Widen those gaps that already exist in education.
How so?
Well, take voucher programs. They worry that those could drain money from public schools, the ones that are already struggling, and then you end up with a system where only wealthy families can actually afford decent education.
So basically, they see Pierce being used to undermine public education, which is not what the case was about at all.
That's one concern, yeah. And they point out, look, Pierce protects the right to choose private education, sure, but it doesn't say the state has to pay for it.
Ah, so there's a difference between having the choice and being able to afford that choice.
Huge difference. So it becomes less about legal rights and more about resources, equity, the role of government in making sure every kid gets a quality education. And Pierce, it didn't answer those questions, but it definitely shaped how we think about them.
Okay, so school choice, that's one area. What about homeschooling? How does Pierce play into that?
Well, homeschooling advocates, they see Pierce as like the foundation of their whole movement, right? It established this right of parents to direct their kids' education, and that includes the right to teach them at home.
Makes sense. They see it as a natural extension of those parental rights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then you have those who are concerned about the quality of homeschooling.
Yeah, I could see where they're coming from. How do you ensure those kids are getting a good education if there's no oversight?
That's the big debate. Some folks think there should be more regulation of homeschooling just to make sure kids are getting what they need, you know?
Right. Like the state has a responsibility to set some basic standards, make sure kids are prepared for the real world.
And that's where it gets tricky, balancing parental autonomy with the state's interest in education. And, you know, homeschooling laws are all over the place.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Some states are really hands-off. Others are way stricter.
Exactly. Some places require specific curriculum, standardized testing, the whole nine yards. So even though Pierce laid down this big principle, how it actually plays out on the ground can vary a lot.
State by state, it's different. Makes sense why there's so much legal wrangling around it.
Oh, yeah. Constant back and forth. Homeschooling families pushing back against regulations. State officials trying to enforce what they see as necessary protections. It's a moving target.
Okay. Last but not least, got to talk about the big one. Vaccine mandates.
Ooh, yeah. Talk about a hot topic.
Yeah.
And Pierce gets thrown around a lot in those debates, too.
How so?
Well, those who are against mandates, they'll often cite Pierce to argue that parents have the final say in what medical treatments their kids get.
So it's like they're saying, my kid, my choice, even if it goes against what the experts recommend.
That's the gist of it. Parental autonomy, bodily integrity, all those big ideas. But of course, those who support mandates say, no way. These are crucial for public health.
Protecting everyone, not just individual kids. And they might say, look, Pierce was decided way before we had these modern vaccines, this whole concept of herd immunity, different time, different medical landscape.
Totally. So maybe applying Pierce so rigidly to this situation doesn't really make sense. They'd say the state has this massive interest in keeping everyone safe, even if it means limiting individual liberties a bit.
So again, we're back to that balancing act. Tough to find the right answer when you've got these competing interests.
Absolutely. And Pierce v. Society of Sisters, you know, even though it seems like it's just about education, it really gets to the core of this debate, individual versus the state.
Wow, what a deep dive. We've covered a century's worth of legal battles, all stemming from this one case. It's amazing to see how relevant it still is today.
Totally. It makes you think about how these landmark cases, they're not just history, they're still shaping our world right now.
And you know, what really sticks with me is that line from Justice McReynolds, the fundamental theory of liberty excludes any general power to standardize children.
Powerful stuff, right? reminds us that while the state has a role to play, ultimately, parents have that primary responsibility, that right to guide their kids' education.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, folks, that wraps up our exploration of Pierce v. Society of Sisters. Hope you found it as fascinating as we did.
Definitely. Always amazing to see how these legal battles play out and the impact they have on our lives.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
See ya!